This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The final NHL Midweek of the 2013 calendar year, as we're going to take next Wednesday off, it being Christmas and all. We figure and spend the day with our friends and family, as it were. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Gensburg. Producer Remus is on loan to us from Rick Ralph and the Rona Roundtable here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Joining us on tonight's show in about 30 minutes' time, he's a vice president of HBO Sports. He's also a coordinating producer of HBO 24/7, The Road to the Winter Classic. Dave Harmon is going to join us for an interview. At 7:30 tonight, Jamal Mayers, recently retired player, most recently played with the Chicago Blackhawks. He's now a radio analyst, I believe, in St. Louis. He's also on NHL Network. He's going to join us here on TSN 1290, do a career retrospective of the career of Jamal Mayers. We want to hear from you at Illegal Curve on Twitter. And of course, Dave Minuk is down at the MTS Center where the Winnipeg Jets skills competition is going to start in about 1 hour's time. He's going to join us in the second half of the show, provide live updates as to what's going on in the skills competition. A fun event, but probably not the best timing for such event for the Winnipeg Jets, given what happened last night in Buffalo.
Well, this is just coming in as well. There's actually going to be a delay for the skills competition to start because actually they need all five members of the Legal Curve for the hot dog relay.
The hot dog relay, does that just involve eating hot dogs?
Yeah, Remus starts it off, and then Drew runs the last leg of the race, but they're going to have to start that off because we're obviously favorites to win it all, right? So there's going to be a delay again. So if you're going to the MTS Center, you're going to have to wait till the members of the Legal Curve get there for the hot dog relay.
I'm willing to bet the public will still show up at 7 o'clock, and if they happen to miss out on the hot dog relay, they're going to have to survive that hardship, I would suggest.
Yeah, well, Remus has the world record right now. 9.53 seconds for eating a hot dog at the MTS Center.
Speaking of hardships, the Winnipeg Jets last night in Buffalo really gave a hardship to the fans of this team that were hoping for a better result. Probably, you know, I don't know if this game was rock bottom or if the game against Florida, where they lost a couple weeks ago, was rock bottom, but it's hard to believe that effort that we saw from the Winnipeg Jets last night, especially right on the heels to me of Kevin Cheveldayoff, the Jets general manager, going about and doing sort of, you know, he obviously did a media availability, a media offensive where he was available to pretty much anybody that wanted to talk about the Winnipeg Jets. Right on the heels of that, you know, almost anything that he said at that and that media availability is for naught after that kind of performance on the road in Buffalo against the worst team in the NHL. Richie, you were on air with Rick last night doing the pre and post game show. You know, what was the reaction? What was what did you see in that game? That, you know, how concerned were you, and was that rock bottom?
Yeah, that's rock bottom, Drew. That's below, I think, where the Florida loss is. Florida's played exceptionally well since that game, really. So, I mean, you look at Florida, younger talent. Buffalo's roster is worse than the league. I don't think anybody really disagree with that. Maybe Calgary would have something to say about that, but they, to me, put more of an effort forward, and their defense is considerably better. So I think Buffalo is the worst roster in the league, and I think they've demonstrated that. Three wins before last night in 33. Three regulation overtime wins, excuse me, in 33 games. You got to try to be that terrible in the NHL. Not only that, the Jets come out and have a 2-0 lead in the second period, and they blow it. And, you know, when if you're a fan of the team, you know, everybody last night was really calling for Claude Noel's head, and I just think that, you know, well, Claude Noel ought to shoulder some blame, so should Kevin Cheveldayoff, as I said last night, and so should the players. And I thought particularly last night, the pairing of Bufflin and Klitsam was especially bad. I don't think anybody really played exceptionally well aside from Scheifele, and his line mates were pretty solid. Scheifele was the best player on the ice. And nothing else. I mean, this team has to be able, and we've been saying it for years now, has to be able to play team defense. They do not have enough talent to try and play this, you know, the road hockey that they're playing. Their defense has to buy in as a team, and none of that's happening. And I just think if you're a Jets fan, you're not becoming apathetic, and that's a good thing. I think you're becoming extremely frustrated and extremely worried about what's next, because in reality, what's next this year is almost assuredly not a playoff spot. So then you have to look to the future. And I don't know if that's the time to do it just yet, but you're getting close to it. And what does that entail? There's a lot of unknown, and I don't think as a fan, there's much encouragement, aside from obviously the progression, which we'll talk about later, of Mark Scheifele, as I just mentioned, mm-hmm. and Jacob Trouba playing pretty solid hockey.
It's funny, you mentioned the fans were screaming for Coach Noel's head, and there's also blame to go around to Kevin Cheveldayoff, Jets general manager, and the players. To me, the least culpable of those three individuals is Claude Noel.
Well, I think I have an issue with the way he ran his bench last night. He played Buffon 27 minutes the night before. Buffon can't handle that time anymore. He's not in good enough shape, and he gets tired. And last night, he was at his worst. 23 minutes last night, led the team again. I understand why he wants to rely on Buff, but you have to understand the back-to-back nature of how strenuous it is in the body, and a guy like that just can't take it. And I thought he mismanaged in that regard. I think he also mismanaged playing the fourth line last night, 4.5 minutes, when Buffalo played their fourth line about 9 to 10 minutes. And what happens is people will say, Odell takes a penalty, and they score in the third period. Sure, that happened. But you get your fourth line out there in the first and second period, get them rolling, and then rely on your horses down the road. So I don't think that was his finest performance this year. I mean, they've been up and down like they have in other years. I think he's partly responsible. But I don't think that because of the Jets, to me, the Jets roster, as it's currently configured, I don't think he has ton to work with.
Richie, you mentioned that the game's frustrating, and I know that Hustler and Lawless just had a big portion of their show dedicated to fans calling in, and we're frustrated, but I might get a little bit of heat on Twitter here, but we need to relax a little bit here, guys. You're talking about a team right now that after 35 games is 10 points out of a playoff spot, and if you think the Jets aren't going to make the playoffs, then that's your opinion, and you might very well be right. But in this game, again, you're talking about mental mistakes and a team that is finding another way to lose. If you look at the game right there, the first goal, what happens? Devin Setoguchi coughs up the puck.
Awful turnover.
And it's a terrible turnover. Awful. And it goes to Mike Weber. He puts it on net, bounces out, comes out to Steve Ott, puts in the first goal. And then the second goal, another goal where missed coverage. The problem with this team right now is they're not finishing games, and we've seen this time and time again. And sure, you can say that this team is losing to inferior competition, but right off the bat, any team can beat any team in the NHL on any given day. So you look at, if you want to say the Jets are going to lose to the Blues, the Jets already beat the Blues this year. The Jets are going to lose to the Kings. They already beat the Kings this year. Sure, they have to win games against inferior competition, but again, I don't think that this team needs a major overhaul. And again, I think that a lot of fans right now are looking at this roster and saying, well, your expectations are too high for this team. Really? Well, I have a problem with that, because the Winnipeg Jets went out in the offseason and made a couple moves that I thought were good. Now, you can say that Devin Setoguchi maybe hasn't progressed or performed at the level that you want to see him at, but Michael Frolik comes in. I think he's played really well, and now he's on the line with Scheifele and Kane, and he's been a consistent player all year. He's not a 55-point guy, but he's added to the penalty kill. He's added to the overall makeup of the team. Now, I have a problem with everyone in the city all of a sudden throwing everyone under the bus, saying, pointing out James Wright, pointing out Chris Thorburn, pointing out Pavlik. First off, Richie mentioned nobody was spectacular. Pavlik kept them in that game in the first period with 19 shots, and none of those goals were his fault. And I think he's been good, with the exception of maybe three or four games, and we're starting to say that Andrei Pavlik isn't a number one goaltender, and what other team would take Andrei Pavlik as their first goaltender? Well, there's other problems with this team besides one player one goalie.
I would agree with you regarding Andrei Pavlik. On my list of problems with this team, he doesn't rank really that high up on my list for problems. Richie, you had Kevin Cheveldayoff on with you and Rick on the second intermission yesterday, and you asked him about, to describe the team, to describe the identity of the team, to describe what this team is. Is this just a mishmash of a bunch of guys playing together, or do they have really a driving force? Reem, do you have the clip ready? Here's the Richie asking Kevin Cheveldayoff yesterday during the intermission.
It's we do have a team that has size and has speed. Now, do we play like that all the time? I think that that's something we were conscious about. Again, it's an interesting thing, because I think this team can take on different identities at different times, and you're just just struggling to find that consistent one. But, you know, if you look at over the course of the couple of years, you know, we have had turnover in players. You know, we have had some veteran players that, you know, have moved on. And, you know, again, you know, you're trying to create with something that is going to be here, you know, from a long-term perspective and stability. So, you know, again, size and speed, I think, is something that is important, you know, as we continue to move forward. But there's lots of aspects that, you know, you'd like to be, you know, continue to note it for.
Let me ask you guys this question. We heard that answer from the Jets general manager, the guy responsible for putting this team together. Can you tell me what the identity of this team is on a night-in, night-out basis? Because I just heard what Chevy said, and I honestly, you know, watching them play 82 games a year, or, you know, however many games they played so far this year, their identity to me is a mystery.
Well, I think there's a reason I asked the question, Drew, is what is the identity? Because I really haven't seen one, and I, you know, he talks there about their being bigger and fast, and I don't disagree with that. I mean, he knows his team, obviously. They just don't really play that fast, and they certainly don't play big. They certainly play faster than they play big. And when you look at, and people have disagreed, you know, they're going to disagree online, I'm sure, and they disagree. We had a caller last time who disagreed in terms of identity and saying that only good teams have identities. I disagree. I think that most teams have identities, and I don't think that the Jets have one. I don't think that when you come into Winnipeg, I don't think you think I'm playing a tough team that's going to make me pay, or I'm playing a really, really fast team that's going to make me pay. I mean, every coach is going to pay say really nice things about the opposing team. Oh, we're really worried about the wingers, really worried about. But in reality, I don't think teams are scared or even remotely concerned when they come in here in terms of what they're facing. They know they're facing a team that's loose defensively. And if you are patient and if you make sure that you put a little bit of pressure on them, sustained pressure, somebody is going to run out of position, and you're going to be okay. And when you're a team who knows eventually it's going to work out goal-wise, so long as you play solid defense, you're going to be just fine.
I think, to me, I mean, did you read the comments of the Dallas Stars players after, I think it was in 30 Thoughts by Elliot Friedman earlier this week, talking about how the Dallas Stars players came into Winnipeg and they were stunned. They haven't seen a 2-on-1 in the Western Conference in years, in that the, you know, they don't remember the last.
What does that even mean, first of all?
I think
of course
it's
there's 2-on-1s.
The
comment was maybe about they exploded offensively for a team. That
2 weeks ago, Sean Horkoff and Tyler Seguin of the Dallas Stars joked that they couldn't remember the last time they saw a 2-on-1 break in the West. Here are the 4 even-strength goals Dallas scored in Saturday's 6-4 win at Winnipeg. A breakaway.
Right.
Valeri Nichushkin walking almost untouched through 3
players. That was a terrible line change.
Jamie Benn in prime scoring position after 2 turnovers and another breakaway. There's other teams laughing at this team, guys.
Well, I wouldn't construe that as laughing.
Yeah,
at the
I mean,
team.
Sean Horkoff, they said they, I mean, they were.
Well, how's that laughing at
they
the
said
team?
They were joking about the last time they saw a 2-on-1 break. I mean, these guys aren't afraid to come into this against this team. They see
Drew,
this as a free space on the bingo card.
That's your opinion. I don't share that opinion. I mean, we're talking about a team right now that comes off of a road trip and wins 4 out of 6 games. They could have won 5 out of 6 games. And they were playing well defensively, and they come back here. They played well defensively against the St. Louis Blues. Yes, they lost that game. It was 2-1, and it could have gone either way, in my opinion. Now, as far as what other teams and what their perceptions of the Winnipeg Jets are, well, that's great that Sean Horkoff thinks that. I mean, at the end of the day, it really is, you know, you talk about identity, and to me, it's about winning. I mean, sure, you have to have an identity because the lack of inconsistency maybe is a byproduct of a lack of identity, but I mean, you got to find ways to win. And the Jets have had so many different opportunities to win games. I mean, they're up 2-0 and yesterday on the road, second game of a back-to-back, and they made mental mistakes and bad giveaways. And then you have a goal where, you know, the first goal, I mean, it was just, you can't do that. When you're Setoguchi at the blue line,
yeah,
you got to get the puck out. I mean, you just, the, you know, so as far as, you know, our team's laughing at the Jets, sure, maybe they are.
I don't think it's laughing. I agree with you. But I do think it is a team that teams are aware of the poorest defensive style that the team plays. And I think at some point, there needs to be a buy-in. I mean, like, again, I don't mean to just point to Dustin Byfuglien, because he certainly adds a ton up front and has great vision and does a lot of things. But, I mean, you can't play defensively much worse than he played last night against the worst, one of the worst teams in the league. And that concerns me. And, again, I think he's overplayed and all that stuff, sure. But also, he just, you know, there's a matter of effort, too, there. And I think in moving your feet and playing defensively, and if you want to play offensively, then play forward. But I didn't like what I saw there yesterday. Obviously, they missed Zach Bogosian. Don't get me wrong. But, I mean, Tobias Enstrom, we talked about him last night. He's got 10 points this year. And what are you paying Tobias Enstrom to do? You ain't paying him to play defense. I mean, you are, to an extent, but you're paying for his offense. You're paying for his puck-moving ability. You're paying for his first pass, excuse me. You're paying for his power play contributions. And, you know, we asked Kevin Sheveldaev, Rick and I asked him earlier in that interview about the power play. Is it a personnel problem or is it a scheme problem? Is there an issue with the players that they're playing, or is there an issue with the system that's being employed? I kind of read it to be, and I'm sure the interview will be up online, I kind of interpreted it to be a little bit of both. You know, what he said, he kind of said, you know, it's a bit of both. And I think they certainly lack a passing element. You can take issue with scheme or not, but I mean, at the same time, when you're gonna pay your defense, you know, $5.2 million Ezzie, for Byfuglien, 5.75 for Enstrom, over 5 for Bogosian, you better be getting some offense, but you also better be getting two way play. I mean, you can't have three Marc-Andre Bergerons here. I'm not saying that they do, but at some point, if you're not gonna get defense, you better get offense, and that's a concern too. So I mean, there's myriad of concerns here in terms of the Jets. And again, what do you go back to? If you aren't talented enough to compete with Chicago and St. Louis and all those teams, then you better be like Nashville in the sense that you go in there and you make them pay. You make them work really hard for those goals, and they may get 20 shots. Those 20 shots may be quality, but you're blocking shots, you're hitting them. It's a tough place to go. Right now, they don't have the talent to do that, and they're not making teams pay, and that's the problem. You have to have that conscience, and I realize that some of that goes onto the coach. In fact, a lot of it goes onto the coach, but only so much of that can be the coach when the players have to take it upon themselves.
Well, that's what I want to ask you about. How serious, in your opinion, and both of you, because you asked Kevin Sheveldayoff this question as well, and we'll play it in a couple minutes. How serious is the leadership gap on this team in your mind?
Well, we've talked about it before. I mean, I think that you have 2 to 3 leaders on this team, and I don't really want to rehash it, because we've talked about, and there's a lack of leadership. There for sure is. I don't think there's any question about that. And, you know, he said he's happy with the leadership, specifically asked him about Ladd and Wheeler. He's happy with that leadership. That's fine. But if you got him off the record, I would bet you money he'd like to add 2 more leaders at least into this dressing room, because there certainly is a lack of leadership at times. And there's only so much that can go to Mark Stewart, Ezzie, who as much as he plays as hard as he can, and I have so much respect for the way he plays, can only do so much on the ice. Andrew Ladd's done a solid job leadership. I'm not blown away by him. He's done a solid job. But how many more guys? And it's just natural. Like, you're not going to go to Blake Wheeler, Ezzie, and you're not going to go to Devin Setoguchi, tap him on the shoulder and say, hey, man, time to be a leader. We've said this before. You're a leader or you're not. So I think that's something they have to look for in the offseason or during the season, one of the two.
Let's go to break. Ezzie, you want to chime in before we go?
No, let's go to break, Drew.
Okay, let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Minutes past 6 o'clock. Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Guy who would have been one of the biggest names on the unrestricted free agency market come July 1st is no longer going to be there. And I mean, really, the number of times where a player really hits UFA status when they're in their prime is just going down and down and down. Nobody's letting their assets go for nothing at this point in the NHL world. Alex Steen agrees.
I don't think that's always a good thing, but I think some teams overpay to do that, which I think you'll see with Phaneuf. But this situation, I think, is a nice value for the team.
Right. Alex Steen, earlier this afternoon, signs a 3-year, $17.4 million contract extension with the St. Louis Blues. He was scheduled to be an unrestricted free agent come July 1st. It's not July 1st, though, anymore, is it?
July 5th now? I don't know.
Yeah, something like that. Anyways, whatever. Beginning of July is when he was scheduled to become an unrestricted free agent. 3 years, $17.4 million. It's just under it's about $5.8 million per season. To me, this is a guy who's got 22 goals on the year. He's having his best offensive season. That certainly goes without saying. He's got 36 points on the year. So he's certainly in the top 10 in the NHL in points. I see it as he's sort of leaving some money on the table. Richie?
Well, is he leaving money on the table? I think as in totality is. I mean, I think long term he could have got more money, five years, 6 years on the open market. Sure, but he got a little bit less, more like 5 years and or 6 years, $30 million kind of thing. Maybe I estimated. I think I said it on the show. I thought he'd get between 5 to 5.5. So he gets a little bit more than that, but he gets a little bit less term. So it's a little give and take there. But I think overall, 3 years gives St. Louis. You're paying a little bit more per year, I think, for less time. But it's surprising that he would ask for 3 years because most of these guys want to get it locked up long term. Now, granted, in 3 years the cap will be far higher. He's betting that he's going to perform at this level, which likely won't happen.
He's 29 right now, so he's going to be in his 30s when this contract expires.
Yeah, the 32, 33 when the contract expires, he could still sign a 3-4 year deal and make big money. So, I think a guy who's comfortable where he is, comfortable on a line with Backes and Oshie, a great line, likes playing in that system, is responsible both ways, can do everything. I think St. Louis gets a nice deal here, but I don't mind the deal from Steen's perspective. It gives him the flexibility. I think some of these guys... They forego the flexibility, and if you see it in baseball, with guys signing Tim Lincecum, for example, signs one-year deal, or even a couple-year deals, it's not the worst thing to sign a short-term deal. He could eventually, if you look at it now, he's foregoing some money down the road. It may very well be the case that in 5 years you look back and the total he could have made over those 5 years actually ends up being more. Is more than what he could have made thinking about it now.
Ezzy, we signed you to a 6-year contract extension this offseason, and so you're under contract to us for a long time. Are you surprised that Steen only went for 3 years?
I am a little bit, and you look at how he's playing right now, and I've had these conversations with other hockey fans, and people are saying, well, he's going to slow off the pace, and he's not going to keep up the pace. Well, again, if he slows down and still gets 40 goals, it's still a career year, so... as far as the term goes, does he leave a bit of money on the table and could he have got more years? Absolutely. And I would probably have imagined that he would have got 6 years or something along those lines, or maybe 5 or 6 years. But, Rich mentioned, is that his option? Or is it interest? Was that coming from him and his agent? And maybe he wants to have the flexibility 3 years from now to go to another team and sign another deal. So it's if you think about it, it's favorable for both the player and the team.
I didn't see I think he was using Don Baisley before. I'm not sure who he used for this contract. I haven't seen them release yet, but
I haven't seen anything official on that front. It's good. I mean, certainly anytime you're getting $17.4 million, it's not a bad contract. I was just a little bit surprised, especially for a guy who's having a career year. But
if you take a step back from the insanity of NHL contracts, a lot of times it makes a lot of sense from both sides.
This deal, you mean?
Yeah, there's risk reward.
Sure.
The risk for St. Louis is he continues to play well, and he tears it up, and then the cap goes up, and you want $7 million a year. And the risk for Steen is he doesn't perform at this level, and when he gets his next contract, he's a little bit older, not performing as well, and won't get that much money.
Well, I mean...
It goes both ways, and I think they look at it, they say, okay, the guy's not 23, but he's not 38, and let's see him through these years, and we have a good team, he's with our core, these are a good chance, good years, and you look at their defense with Pietrangelo and Shattenkirk. I mean, they're going to be contending for a long time, likely. So I don't think this is their only window right now. Overall, this contract makes sense to me. If you look at it from both perspectives, and let's see what happens.
Playing on, I believe we said, or one of you said that you thought that we discussed it at least on Saturday, that the Oshie, Backes, and Steen line is one of the best lines in hockey.
Well, it is, Drew, because of the skill, size, and tenacity, really, of that line. Oshie's a guy that likes to go into the corners. He's not afraid to go into the corners. Backes, if you look at the hits leaders in the NHL, is always up there, kind of plays the Dustin Brown style of game. And Backes is never going to be an 80-point player in the NHL, I would say.
Right. No,
and there's no problem with that. He does a lot of other things and contributes in a lot of other ways. And it is a really good line. And Alex Steen, right now, it's his seventh year in St. Louis, and he's been productive, and this year he is really their go-to scorer. I think that he is good enough and really has that game-breaking ability that they don't really, the Blues might add somebody. I don't think they need to add necessarily a guy like Thomas Vanek, who a lot of people are looking at maybe to put them over the top. I'm not saying it won't happen, but I think that right now I mean, look at the St. Louis Blues. They can win 2-1 games all night long, right? So, yeah. But for Steen, it's good for him. He deserves it. And to me also, Richie, I think the timing is really ideal. You're signing a guy before Christmas. You're not letting that be a distraction.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't think that they were ever going to be close to letting Steen test the UFA waters, because you'd have so many teams, and he could argue he can make $8 million. If he ends up with a 40 goal season, they might offer him $8 million. So it's really nice that they locked him up and didn't let it be a distraction, because this team is built for a Stanley Cup run this year. This team is not going to be happy with getting beat by the LA Kings in the second round again. This team is good enough to win the cup, in my opinion. I think, I don't know if they're at the same level as the Blackhawks, but I think right now you're the Blues.
I don't think they're far off.
You're looking at knocking off the Kings or the Hawks, and if you don't knock one of those teams off, because we know the Kings have knocked them out 2 years in a row.
Gotta get through the division this year. Yeah. Gotta get through the Hawks first.
Or at least 2 out of 3 years, whatever. Yeah, they've knocked them out twice.
Their first step is beating the Hawks and then in the division final before heading to the conference final.
And there's possible a crossover, but yes, of course.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying. Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Dave Harmon. He's a vice president at HBO Sports. He's also a coordinating producer of HBO 24/7, The Road to the Winter Classic. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
The NHL Midweek Hockey Hotline.
We welcome to NHL Midweek. He is the vice president of HBO Sports. He's a coordinating producer on 24/7, The Road to the Winter Classic. Dave Harmon, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us on TSN 1290.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Dave, obviously, you know, it's a fabulous show that every hockey fan, you know, north of the border, south of the border, has been enjoying for the last number of years, and this year is no exception. One episode already in the books, another one coming up this coming weekend. How long does it take to get the players comfortable with the presence of the HBO cameras?
Well, we find that, you know, teams like the Toronto Maple Leafs are used to having cameras around in general. And then to have us there every minute of every day, it takes probably about 3 or 4 days for that to happen. So we've learned this over the years with both our boxing and the Hockey 24/7. So we start taping a good week before there's anything you ever wind up seeing on the show. So by the time last week came and went, the players were pretty much ignoring the cameras.
You know, Dave, you mentioned the 24/7 for boxing, and also HBO does the Hard Knocks series. How do, from your conversations, how do hockey players compare to football players in terms of their comfort level with the cameras, as mentioned before?
Hockey players are similar to football players in our sense, in that they enjoy having the cameras there. They think that this is a nice opportunity for people to get to see them and their personalities. And, you know, they don't always get, under the helmet, as you might say, you know, with some of the other things that are on television. I think there's a big difference, though, with Hard Knocks, in that a lot of the players we're profiling there are trying to make the team. Mm-hmm. And they can be cut at any time, let alone at the end of training camp. They're a little more on their guard. In the middle of the NHL season, very few players are worrying about their roster position. And it's much more about just their day-to-day existence.
Have you thought, Dave, about doing a focus on an NHL training camp?
Well, I'm happier with the regular season. there's no other show that we do that has the regular season. So, you know, you can't really replicate what we have with our microphones on the games, where there's the both coaches mic'd, you have referees mic'd, as well as, you know, 4 or 5 of the players on either the Red Wings or Maple Leafs. The intensity in a preseason game is nothing, mm-hmm. as you know, compared to a regular season game. I wouldn't want to give that up.
Dave, we want to talk to you about the production side because, of course, you're a producer. So in a given week, a given episode, how much video is actually shot? How many hours go into editing and to produce one show per week?
I would say we probably shoot about 75 hours per week per team. Wow. And that's because we have more than one camera in each camp. So, you know, if we're shooting 25 hours over a week with three cameras, that's how you get to 75. So what comes back to New York where we edit it is about, I mean, 500 hours over the course of 4 weeks worth of footage when you include the Winter Classic itself in it.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Dave Harmon. He's a vice president of HBO Sports. He's also the coordinating producer of 24/7, The Road to the Winter Classic. Dave, ahead of time, before you, you know, even begin to really get into Detroit or Toronto in this case, you know, do you know who the characters are, or is it sort of determined after you start gathering some footage that this guy, you know, is somebody we're going to focus on throughout the course of the show?
Well, to a point, yes. When you look at the, you know, the Maple Leafs, we certainly want to be talking to the stars, and you know, there's certainly someone like Phil Kessel, someone we knew we wanted to speak to right away, and Dion Phaneuf. I mean, when we knew that he was married to Alicia Cuthbert, that's a little interesting to us. So we check them off. And on the other side, Henrik Zetterberg's hurt right now, but you know, we want people like him or Pavel Datsyuk in the show because they're big names. And then once we start hearing from the teams of some other personalities and people who might be interesting for the show, then we shoot them and, you know, we see what comes of it. You know, we don't really predetermine that. It has to be interesting. You know, people might have told us last time we did this series that Brizgalov was going to be an interesting interview, but no one would have predicted that he was going to start talking about the making of a universe and all of the things he talked about.
You know, that kind of stuff is certainly interesting, David. Also, in terms of strategic information, you know, these teams are so protective of that. How do you guard against putting too much of the team's, you know, proprietary information, as it may be, into the episodes?
That's no problem at all. Between Hard Knocks and this show, you know, the one thing we make an agreement with the teams about is we're going to show everything. You know, if they're losing, they're losing, and that's, you know, sorry, and we'll show you losing, we'll show you winning. But we will not give the rest of the NHL or the NFL a competitive advantage by seeing any of those type plans. So they let us tape everything, but then after we tape something, they might say, hey, you know what, from the point we were discussing, you know, this strategy on the power play, at that point, you really can't use that. And it's very hard for us to argue with that. Why would we want to put any team we're following in a competitive disadvantage in the league? Mm-hmm. There's nothing in it for anyone in that.
Dave, this is, of course, the third year for 24/7 Road to the Winter Classic because of the lockout. There couldn't be one last year. What has changed with this series? And maybe as far as on the production side, what are you trying to change yourselves, or is it changing organically?
I think the thing that's changed the most with this season is that because we always shoot leading up to the Winter Classic, that means that Christmas and New Year's fall at the same time in every show. But we don't really want people to be able to start predicting what's going to be in every show. Okay, this is the show where the team has its Christmas party. This is the show where the team, you know, goes on the road for New Year's and plays a prank on one of the rookies. That does start to get predictable. So I think we might be avoiding subjects like that this year. You know, if we have more compelling things that the players or the team are doing at that point.
20 minutes before 7 o'clock, you're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Dave Harmon. He's a vice president of HBO Sports. He's also the coordinating producer of 24/7, The Road to the Winter Classic.
David, does the NHL consult you before they pick the two teams to put into the Winter Classic?
We wish we had that much influence, but I think the Winter Classic is bigger than HBO. You know, they've sold out the big house in Michigan with 100-something thousand people, and NBC is showing it on national television. I'm not saying we're an afterthought, but we're close to. Oh, by the way, these are the teams you got this year. But you know, so far we have no complaints. My God, between the Penguins and Capitals, and the Rangers and Flyers, and now the Red Wings and Maple Leafs. You know, they're doing a pretty good job for us.
Any concern at all? You kind of just answered this question, but any concern at all with the Canadian team being involved in terms of the, you know, the interest in the States?
Well, one of the advantages of HBO is that we're a subscription service, so that we don't have to sell advertising based on ratings. So, you know, Rogers can show the show in Canada, and that's great. And we can show the show, and our people who pay their good money per month for HBO, you know, they're happy. And, you know, if there are people who aren't following the Toronto Maple Leafs, then maybe they are NHL fans, or maybe they're fans of behind-the-scenes access of things they don't see before. Or maybe they're Alicia Cuthbert fans. You never know.
I think you have three Alicia Cuthbert fans in this studio at the very least. Dave, we'll let you go on this last question. With the NHL expanding their stadium series and sort of making more showcase events in the course of the NHL regular season, is there any thought of expanding the 24/7 series as well?
Well, we would love to expand it, but I would more prefer to focus not on more outdoor games, but on how interesting this show would be in the playoffs.
Sure.
Wow, yeah.
I would love
absolutely
to see that.
Well, if you produce a petition, we'll sign the first three names on that petition.
Okay, I'll call you first.
Okay.
So, Dave, I guess those 75 hours of shooting would go to like 175 hours of footage, right?
Immediately.
Right.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Just think about the possibilities. But, you know, it's it's only a dream at the moment.
Yeah, a tantalizing dream, no doubt. Dave Harmon, Vice President of HBO Sports, coordinating producer of 24/7, The Road to the Winter Classic. Thanks very much for joining us this evening on NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Dave. Take care. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on tsn1290.ca.
Thank you to Dave Harmon of HBO Sports for joining us to give that insight into 24/7, The Road to the Winter Classic. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes and on tsn1290.ca. It'll also be posted on illegalcurve.com, illegalcurve.com, where Dave Manuk has just published the rosters and the participants in the various skills competitions tonight. That'll get underway in about 10 minutes' time at MTS Center. Team White is Adam Party, Keaton Ellerby, Evander Kane, Anthony Peluso, Brian Little, Chris Thorburn, Eric Tangrady, Dustin Byfuglien, Mark Scheifele, Michael Frolik, and Andre Pavlik. Team Blue features Mark Stewart, Jacob Trouba, Olli Jokinen, Andrew Ladd, James Wright, Grant Klitsam, Blake Wheeler, Toby Enstrom, Devin Setoguchi, Eric Odell, and Al Montoya. There's five events for tonight's game. Or tonight's, event.
Skills competition.
Skills competition, thank you. Fastest skater, here are the four players from Team White in the fastest skater.
Well, let us guess. I mean, let's make it interesting.
Okay.
Here.
Give me your four fastest skaters on Team White.
Jacob Trouba.
No, he's on Team Blue.
Well, so there's four on each team?
There's four on each team.
Let's pick one guy who wins it all.
There we go.
Fair enough. So fastest skater is Kane. I mean, it's close.
Yeah, okay, I'm going to pick Trouba just to be interesting.
Yeah, Trouba with the size and.
What about Blake Wheeler as a long shot?
I think I only got two guys are faster, but he can wheel. No pun intended.
Yeah. Accuracy shooting. There's three players per team for accuracy.
James
shooting.
James Wright.
Well, who's in it? Read the players who are in it.
Okay, accuracy shooting. It's Eric Tangrady, Mark Scheifele, and Brian Little for Team White. It's Devin Setoguchi, Eric Odell, and Olli Jokinen for Team Blue.
I'll take Scheifele.
I'll take Setoguchi to win the accuracy.
Really?
Yeah.
after those two snipes yesterday when he was
nice shots.
Picking apart Shifley. Ryan Miller in the second period? Shifley.
Sedigucci can shoot, though.
Yeah, he can.
Yeah, yep. Shifley. We'll talk about Mark Shifley coming up in about 10 minutes' time to prove that not all is lost for the Winnipeg Jets, certainly.
Jesse the intern.
Jesse the intern is going to join us to talk about that coming up at about 7 o'clock. Puck control relay. There are three heats and then one head-to-head contest. Heat 1 features Evander Kane, Michael Frolik, and Mark Scheifele going up against Blake Wheeler, Olli Jokinen, and Devin Setoguchi.
Wheeler. I got Blake Wheeler there. He can handle the puck.
It's got to be somebody who's got some nice hands in tight. Mm-hmm. That's
Scheifele's
what
got good
for.
Hands, too, but I like Wheeler there.
Yeah, Wheeler does have good hands. Just for the sake of argument, I'll take Scheifele.
Heat 2 features Adam Party, Keaton Ellerbe, and Dustin Byfuglien. It's an all-defense heat against Mark Stewart, Grant Clitsam, and Toby Enstrom.
Take Enstrom there.
Yeah, I'll take Enstrom, too.
You think he shortens the stick for that event? It seems like a kind of thing that you'd be in trouble with a long stick.
Yeah.
So we'll get Dave Minuk to report back if what the size of Toby Enstrom's stick in that contest. And then in the head-to-head relay, it's Brian Little for Team White against Evander Kane for Team Blue.
I'll take Little in that one.
I'll take Kane.
Fair enough. Hardest shot.
Byfuglien.
Four players per side. Keaton Ellerbe, Adam Party, Anthony Peluso, and Dustin Byfuglien for Team White.
Okay.
Andrew Ladd, Jacob Trouba, Devin Setoguchi, and Grant Clitsam for Team Blue.
Clitsam's got an underrated shot.
He does.
I'll go Byfuglien 1, Trouba 2.
Yeah, I'm the same. Byfuglien takes that. I do think Trouba and Clitsam are probably 2-3, although that's the one thing that people will get surprised, because some of these guys who don't have time to take that shot will have great shots.
Yeah, and Richie Party has all of that weight behind his shot, but Byfuglien's shot might be the hardest in the entire league, let alone the Jets. Yeah.
It's certainly up there. And then the final event tonight is a breakaway competition where all the players, team members on each side will go on a breakaway against Andre Pavlik or Al Montoya, respectively.
Well, Peluso should win that one, no?
That's well. Hang on, is Mike Santorelli coming back for the event tonight? Mike Santorelli could do it. Anyway, so live coverage of that available on illegalcurve.com. You can catch it there. Dave Minuk with a live blog of all the events, and he'll be on joining us periodically during the last hour of the show. Before we go to break, we still actually have a few minutes. I want to talk first about...
Didn't the segment just start?
I want to talk first about the Tom Wilson hit on Braden Schenn.
Yeah.
We were talking about it off air, and Richie, you said that Tom Wilson hit is dirtier than what Sean Thornton did to Brooks Orpik.
Absolutely.
It's a charge.
It's just, but it's blatant.
How many steps does he take on that hit?
Who is it that James Wisniewski did that to? I'm trying to remember who he did it to in Anaheim when he was with the Blackhawks. I forget. It was a similar hit. It was disgusting, and last night's hit to me is worse than the Thornton one. Thornton loses his cool, but he's in intensity of the game. Orpik won't fight him. Schenn doesn't see Wilson. Wilson comes from a mile away, full bore, sees his numbers and smokes him through the boards. What an idiot! And I'm sorry. That hit bothers me more than the Thornton stuff, because the hits from behind and a charge like that is such a concern. There's a reason we have stop signs on the back of jerseys. Usually these suspensions don't get me going this much. But that is such a blatant hit. He better get 20 games.
Richie,
give him 20 games.
I have a ton of respect for Adam Oates and Ovechkin. After the game, they were saying that they thought there was nothing wrong with the hit. What are they talking about? I understand that they're trying to defend their teammate Wilson, or in Oates' case, his player. But Tom Wilson... And you can go look at it right now on TSN or YouTube. Tom Wilson, I think he comes off the bench, or he's for sure skating in from the blue line, full speed.
Give.
And I agree with you, Richie. These hits, like, what is going on right now? Like, they're same old. These are avoidable.
These players don't care. I mean, the league's trying to do its best. The players don't care. And
the Wisniewski hit was on Brent Seabrook
record. Yeah. And they were teammates before that.
That's right.
Chicago. Adam Oates, give Claude Julien. Let's go back to the Sean Thornton thing, because give Claude Julien credit. What did Claude Julien say after the game?
Said that
there was something wrong with the play. Mm-hmm. He admitted there's something wrong with the play.
You're talking about the Thornton-Orpik interaction.
Oates is going to say
when you punch a guy and he's defenseless, we talked about this last week, nobody doesn't think that he should get suspended. Maybe. I mean, it's for, us to talk about 10 or 12 or 15 games. Maybe his appeal, Richie, goes through, and maybe they take away a couple of games. As far as I'm concerned, 10, 12, 15, there isn't a huge difference. If you give a guy 10 games, I think it sends a message. But these hits from behind, I know we've talked about this so many times, but I just don't understand what you're thinking when you know that's a dirty hit. When you're a minor league hockey player,
you're learning
how to play hockey. We've talked about this, Richie. You don't hit a guy when you see his numbers. And he sees his numbers. Not only does he see his numbers, he saw it for the 5 seconds he was skating in from the blue line.
I know he turned a little bit at the end, but he was coming from so far away and plowed right through him.
Okay, but there's a difference there, right? Because I agree with you. He turns, but he still doesn't see him.
I agree with that.
Richie made a very good point. Richie often makes good points.
Last week, Richie
made the point that you have to be able to take a hit, too. And I look at Derek Englund's suspension. He got 5 games, I believe.
That's right. He got 5 for his hit on Justin Abdelkader of the Red
Abdelkader.
Wings.
If you look at that hit, though, that's a different situation where Englund really, if you look at it, he's trying to go shoulder to shoulder, and Abdelkader moves into him. Now, I'm not saying that he shouldn't have been suspended. All I'm saying is there's a difference between these two issues that we have in hockey. There's hits to the head, and there's hitting from behind.
Well, to me, they're both
a problem, and I just don't get why game after game we see more and more of this, because these are avoidable, in my opinion.
If Tom Wilson, you know, let's say Shen doesn't, you know, takes that hit shoulder to shoulder, it's still a dirty hit because it's a charge.
Right.
I mean, the hit,
he gets a penalty regardless.
I mean, it's a boarding penalty.
Yep.
And it's a charging penalty, so there was nothing about that you can't say, well, Shen leaned into it or he turned the wrong way.
It's crazy. The hit's crazy.
I mean, he takes 6 steps to get at the guy.
What happened
it's
to the,
like Ryan Garbutt's hit on Dustin Penner earlier this year.
Drew, what happened to the good old days with Scott Stevens or Rob Blake? It's a defenseman is separating the guy from the puck and hits him cleanly into the boards. I mean, like that is how
lots
you body check.
Lots of those hits that Scott Stevens laid nowadays would be suspensions.
Yeah, but the guys had the puck. He was playing defense on those plays, and he was hitting the guy who's coming up. This is not that play. This is just clearly just running the guy. Just watch it. He's just running him. That's all he's doing.
Sure, it is.
It's not like he's backing up on defense, seeing a guy with his head down up the middle and hitting him like Stevens did, right? Look at all Stevens has hit. You know, on Kozlov, on Slava Kozlov, on Lindros, even Ron Francis on that later one, the end of the career, even Paul Kariya, all up the middle, head down up the middle. This isn't a corner,
right?
Running from the blue line, wherever he was. I mean, come on. It just, you hear this all the time, and I just. Again, you know, people probably say stop talking about suspensions. Well, I'll say I agree. I don't want to talk about it, but these hits are just so egregious. You have to mention it. Players have no respect, and it's been years now. I mean, unless the players keep appealing the suspensions, guys. Because
let me stop you right there. Do you have a problem with Sean Thornton appealing his 15-game suspension? Then
I don't like it because I think this message it sends to the other players is an issue for me. Sure, it's within his right. We know it's within his right. It's been bargained collectively.
Like Drew,
bargained.
Let's just for the sake of argument, Drew. Let's say it goes down from 15 to 12. Sure, he saves money, right? But what's that proving here? It was still a very dirty thing to do. That's what I think Richie's getting at. What kind of message does it send? Okay, let's chip 3 games off the suspension. What does that accomplish?
Shen sees him at the end,
but it's too late at that point. In my mind.
You said it's so much momentum. It doesn't matter if he sees him. He didn't hold up.
Even if Shen does see him and he hits him shoulder to shoulder, that was my point. It's still going to be a devastating hit. That's illegal. Let me ask you this question about Sean Thornton quickly before we go to break. If the NHLPA whispers in his ear and says, you know, we really want you to appeal this, you know, Sean Thornton may not have been on board. You know, the NHLPA is saying we want you to appeal it to prove that we have this ability and that maybe we're going to win. Mm-hmm. How much of a problem do you have if it's the NHLPA sort of coercing Thornton doing it?
They're always going to do it because they always want to take it. They always want to make sure that the NHL doesn't push these players around. That's been going on since Bob Goodenough used to yell at Al MacInnis for taking less money to stay in St. Louis because he was happy. I mean, that just happens. It's the way it is. But the players have to take it upon themselves and say, hey, I screwed up here.
Exactly.
I'm going to sit out here because I know that I put somebody in a position, health-wise, in jeopardy. And when I come back, I'm going to change. Not change like Matt Cook because I'm worried about making money. Because they tell you to ban him from the league. Sean Thornton's only done this once. You know, but he should sit on it and accept it.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the development of Mark Scheifele. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Well, welcome back to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Online at tsn1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the latest Winnipeg Jets news, including our live blog, live from the MTS Center and the Winnipeg Jets Skills Competition.
Well, of course it's live.
I know.
It's a live blog.
It's a live blog, exactly. It's available at illegalcurve.com. Dave Manuk manning the fort at MTS Center.
With this music, I don't know what...
Chili's,
I want to get Jesse's opinion. With this music, it kind of sounds like Drew's about to, like, freestyle. You know what I mean? Like, just, like, rip it. Like,
yeah, I assure you I am not about to freestyle.
I give credit to Remus. If he's going to be playing 90s music, at least he's playing good 90s music.
Remus is giving me the thumbs up. With this music, it's kind of got, like, a good beat for Drew just to start saying, like, on the mic, got some Timbits by my side. You know, like...
Did you just rap on air?
On the mic, got some Timbits on my side.
My wife at home. It's chilly outside.
This segment of the show is brought to you by Chill Bar and Grill, located right at Confusion Corner at 423 McMillan Avenue. Craft beer, great food, delicious cocktails, and enough HD TVs to guarantee that you won't miss a minute of the action. The Chill Bar and Grill, Illegal Curve away game headquarters. Check them out online at chillbar.ca.
Drew Tang Clan.
We welcome.
Why are you always more engaged in these parts than your
in the actual
well,
show?
Well, when I don't have to take anything seriously, that's when I really shine.
Yeah. Welcome back, anyways. We welcomed on air for the first time. We've spoken about him for the last couple of weeks. He's our intern for the month of December, I think a little bit into January. I'm not 100% sure.
He's attending Ryerson.
Attends Ryerson University out there in Toronto, so he's a local Winnipeg boy, so we always like to support the local boys, as it were. Jesse, the intern, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
Our pleasure. And we're going to open it up to the entire roundtable, of course, here, is Mark Scheifele. And it has not been a great week, 2 weeks, for the Winnipeg Jets in terms of, you know, their development and everything else. But if you want to pick one guy that, you know, has been improving by leaps and bounds almost each and every game for the last couple weeks, ever since they started that six-game road trip, that would be Mark Scheifele. And he was the best player on the ice last night.
He was.
And he's been very noticeable in pretty much all the games since that road trip has started. And to Winnipeg Jets fans who probably acknowledge that this is a bit of a lost year for the Jets at this point in time, they have to be thrilled with the development of Mark Scheifele and how he's played since they headed out on the road.
Absolutely. Mark Scheifele, as of late, has definitely been one of the Jets' best forwards. Compared to the beginning of the season, he's progressed immensely. In his first 10 games, he scored one goal, had two assists. He was plus one, which is still respectable. Low 40% on faceoffs, and was averaging around 16 minutes and 24 seconds of ice time a game. And in his last 10, he has four goals, four assists. He's averaging just above 17 minutes of ice time, two of those being on the power play. And he's been plus three. He's showing patience with the puck. He's playing responsibly in the defensive zone. And this is a guy that really deserves a lot of credit.
And
because
you talk, Jesse, about his progression in terms of stats-wise right there, right? You talk about he's playing more minutes now, and he's producing at those minutes, which is important. I think also one thing to point out is who he's playing with now. I think Michael Frolik has been a nice security blanket for him. We talked about it on the pregame show yesterday in that Frolik's a good defensive player. And good offensive players, especially good offensive centers with such responsibility both ends of the ice, really do take to playing with defense with at least one good defensive winger. And Frolik is pretty good, solid both ways. But the idea is Frolik was drafted high by Florida to be a scorer. He's rounded out his game, understood what it takes to be a successful NHL player. Having him beside Scheifele consistently now Kane's playing there, has really helped Mark Scheifele, I think, understand the game but also feel secure. And he could take a chance up the ice because Frolik can help defend as well.
You know, Jesse mentioned the stats, and he's on a four-game point streak now, and Jesse also mentioned he's been more responsible in his defensive zone. And when you're not scoring in the NHL, because let's be honest, guys, in the OHL, he was averaging 3 or 4 points a game. Sure. So he doesn't really know up until this point how to play without the puck and when he's not getting goals and contributing on the score sheet, right? So you look at Mark Scheifele, and to me, he has it's unquestionable. Any Jets fan right now will tell you that the last 15 games have been a lot better than the first 20 games, right? And sure, he has issues in the faceoff circle still because he's not as strong as a lot of these guys that he's going up against. But right now you have a situation where He's playing with Kane and Frolik, two really good players, right? Frolik's got the cup last year. Kane is, you know, a future 40-goal scorer. I think we'd all agree. And another thing, too, if you looked at last night, I think everybody was looking at Mark Scheifele and, you know, because you're a center, you have that playmaking element to your game. But if you look at it, if you look at how he scored those goals yesterday, you can see that Scheifele might be more of a shooter than what we're giving him credit for.
He's a good passer with a really good wrist shot. I think that's what he is. And I think, you know, he's got really nifty wrist shot. It's a little bit deceiving, I guess, but it comes off the stick well, and he can pick corners. But another thing I think is right now his game is progressing in open ice. And the corners need has some work to do. And
which is a size a function and a strength function.
Yeah, I guess a couple things, balance-wise. But I, you know, where how he skates and all that stuff. But I think he's improving in open ice, and you can see that. You know, he's got space. He's creating space for himself, and he's able, and he's becoming confident in that space. And I think in open ice, he has improved immensely over the past 3 weeks. I still personally think, and I'm standing by it, I think he should have started the season in the AHL and gradually moved up. But the way they've handled him, the way he's playing, and you can't question it.
It doesn't seem to have been too much of a deterrent for this year. When the first 15 games, you thought, "Oh God, is this going to shatter the guy's confidence for the rest of the year?"
Well, I guess one thing that they don't want to do is they don't want to put him up, bring him down, put him up, bring him down.
They don't
want to
yo-yo
one or the other. Yeah.
Sure, which I can appreciate. And to me, sort of the most impressive, I mean, obviously two goals yesterday, very impressive. To me, the most impressive part of those two goals weren't the shots. I mean, they were great shots. But the fact that he waited that extra split second on that first goal yesterday, when I thought he was going to get stick checked, and he sort of made that one extra move when I don't know who the Sabres defenseman was that was coming from behind on him.
Oh, they're all terrible, don't worry.
Well, I know, they're all pretty bad defensemen, don't get me wrong. Yeah. But he had the patience to wait that extra second, not panic with the puck.
Confidence.
And
confidence.
That Miller went down and he put it up. And that, you could see that he's got that much more confidence and knowledge that, I can play at this level, and you didn't see that through the first 15 or so games of the year.
Yeah, and I mean, that's signs of maturity right there, because, Scheifele's been extremely patient with the puck, and, I mean, we're used to seeing him make mistakes with the puck, but he's waiting now, and he just looks like a completely different hockey player.
I agree with you, Jesse, and I think, Drew, you talked about the two goals. The second goal, he hugs the boards, and Matt D'Agostini is trying to chip the puck by him. Mm-hmm. And what he does is he comes in on Christian Ehrhoff, and what he does is he actually uses Christian Ehrhoff as a screen, and he's in front of him kind of almost screening Miller, and then he picks the top corner. He's a smart player, and I think we're starting...
Let me get in there quickly. If you watch Ryan Miller's reaction after that goal, he's like, Christian Ehrhoff, what are you doing?
Right, right.
That's the reaction. It's, if you're going to either block the shot, you're going to get out of my way, and you have a role to play. They have a system that they want to play, and Miller was very, very agitated with the way that was played as. But again, it doesn't take away from, as you mentioned, Scheifele's ability to create a chance there and then take a nice shot.
You still have to pick the corner. I mean, those are still two big league shots. And, I mean, I was surprised that he has that quality of shot. I didn't realize.
His skating has improved as well. I mean, and that goes to the open ice issue. There's been a lot of improvement. When he came up, the issue, he's always had the shot. I mean, shots got a little better, but he always had the shot. And he always had the ability to think the game in terms of playmaking. The issues were skating and his ability to, lean on people. His skating has improved, and then I think thereby his open ice play has improved. His strength and stuff in the corner still has some work to do. I mean, he's not here. He hasn't arrived, but he's on his way right now to establishing himself.
This is the eternal question that Jets fans are always going to be asking. Scheifele or Couturier?
Well, you went over the stats, right, Jesse?
Yeah, I did. In their last 10 games, I mean, you can't base it just on their last 10 games, but Couturier has 3 goals and 4 assists. He's been 41% on faceoffs, which is not much better than Scheifele.
Right.
2 minutes on the power plays, averaging close to 20 minutes of ice time. But, I mean, it's important to also think about just the position that Sean Couturier was brought into the NHL. He was brought onto a very talented at the time Philadelphia Flyers team, which helped him mature as a player. But Scheifele was brought into a completely different situation. The Jets didn't have players like Claude Giroux, Scott Hartnell, who had a great season at the time. Couturier was a rookie. Mm-hmm. Daniel Briere, who was on the team at the time. And I think, not to take anything away from Sean Couturier, but Scheifele's ceiling is really high, and finally he's starting to play with players who he's comfortable with and can produce with. And honestly, guys, it wouldn't even surprise me if that line turned into our first line.
And Jesse, you make a good point, because Sean Couturier comes into the league in his first year of eligibility, right? And so did Mark Scheifele, but we all knew that Scheifele wasn't going to stick around. What did he play that year? Four games? Five games?
Yeah.
Under 10
like
for
that.
Sure, because he didn't burn the first year of his entry-level deal. But now Sean Couturier is playing behind LeCavalier and Giroux, and Scheifele essentially is only playing behind Little. So I think it is a good point. You can't compare it necessarily apples to apples. But a year ago, when everyone was saying, well, why didn't the Jets take Couturier? Well, Scheifele scores two beautiful goals yesterday. Then all of a sudden, you know, the teeter-totter starts to swing the other way, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at the comparison. The comparison's always going to be made when you're drafted that close together. It's you're always going to look at that, you know, because Couturier was favored to be that pick, and the Jets went quote-unquote off the board, which they did, really, to take Scheifele, they're always going to be compared. They are different players, though. And you know, Couturier is becoming being afforded more offensive opportunity now in Philadelphia with the Vinny LeCavalier injuries, not
right.
just injury that he has now, injuries. And he's kind of taken another step offensively in his production. One thing that, you know, the natural ability people will say likely Scheifele has a little bit more of a high ceiling. One thing, though, you can't necessarily talk about in terms of Couturier is defensively, you know, he's gone up in a playoff series, guys, one-on-one, essentially, with Evgeny Malkin and done a heck of a job. And that defensive part, I'm not saying this to denigrate what Scheifele's done. I'm just saying that, you know, Couturier has a different role there, as Jesse mentioned, and he's done a nice job in that role. So he's being afforded more opportunity offensively now in a similar way that Scheifele's being afforded more offensive opportunity. Sure, Couturier's been in the league longer, but, you know, it's a question of how do you want me to play, right? And Flyers are afforded, the Flyers have so much talent that he can play, he can commit to that defensive style and play that way. Whereas the Jets can't do that because Jokinen can't score at a consistent level, and, you know, Eric O'Dell just came up last game, so they have a little bit more of a need. It's a good, you know, for the Jets, and overall, you're happy with the way things have gone right now, and you want to make sure that continues, and you want to make sure that he continues to play this way, and hopefully, another thing to point out is the defensive pairings he's playing against, right? When you become the second line center,
yeah,
established, consistent second line center, you have a second line that the other teams scout and know about. You have to be able to play against the other team's second pairing defenseman. And
sure.
So he's going to be facing more quality in that regard, whether it be Kevin Shattenkirk, whether it be Slava Voynov. There's some good quality defensemen out there that he'll be playing against. It'll be interesting to see how they adjust to him and how he adjusts to them.
Sure. It is a man's game, and he's on his way to hopefully good heights.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is a process, and one step at a time.
Well, and it's important to compare the guys now, but at the end of the day, we're going to have to the determination of who's better, if we're going
to
compare 7th versus 8th, it's going to have to be to when they're in their mid-20s, right?
Yeah.
And they've each played at least 5 seasons. Then you can say, okay, this guy's clearly better. Because right now, I would say I would rather have Scheifele on my team than Couturier.
People in Winnipeg are going to, you know, it's like, you know, 2 weeks ago, no question. 2 weeks from now, probably going to switch again.
Yeah, sure.
We're in a period of a great success. And we'll see what it's like in 2 weeks. We'll see what it's like in 2 months. We'll see what it's hopefully like in 2 years, 10 years, and all that stuff.
That's what being a sports fan is all about. Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Minutes past 7 o'clock here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Still to come on tonight's show, Jamal Myers is going to join us in about 10 or so minutes' time. Dave Minuk down at the MTS Center for the Winnipeg Jets Skills Competition. He will give us an update coming up in about, whenever the first event, which is the fastest skater event, comes to a wrap. He's going to give us a call and we'll update you on who the fastest skater, at least tonight, on the Winnipeg Jets was. I think you
what about
both
the hot dog relay?
Yeah, the hot dog relay, again, has not been, is still not going to happen. Primarily, there's a lack of hot dogs. That seems to be our biggest impediment to the hot dog relay.
Well, Richie can back me up. Remus polishes a hot dog off quicker than any. It's like a cheetah eating, you know, their prey. It's unbelievable.
Three bites.
The way he's like the three bite champion.
Yeah,
three bites. One, two, three. It's unbelievable. puts a little mustard on there, and I'll take Remus any day of the week.
Loves his mustard.
I'm just glad you clarified what three and how to count to three it sounds like. That was important for our listeners.
I can do other languages, whatever. I mean, I can count pretty high. No big deal.
Interesting article coming to us, the Illegal Curve article of the week here on NHL Midweek, coming from Luke Fox. Boys, as hockey players, how interested would you be in an unbreakable hockey stick?
Well, I'm particularly interested because this is the Illegal Curve hockey show.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested right off the bat, if there's an unbreakable hockey stick, if you can have a stick on the market that, let's say, even breaks 50% less than your average composite stick on the market, I think that's good news, because hockey parents now have to buy their kids $250 sticks. I think there's sticks that are even $300 plus. You know, the good old days of buying the $19 Sherwood 70-70 are a thing of the past. I don't think there are any kids out there that want to use wooden sticks. So to know that there's this stick that's being developed in Toronto, which is essentially indestructible, is kind of cool.
A business student in Toronto named Daniel Palumbo, he's only 20 years old, so he's already accomplished more with his life than we have, is developing this hockey stick, which is...
Speak for yourself, Drew.
Sorry. He read about a product called nanocrystalline metals. And basically what nanocrystalline metals do is they can be coated onto any device. In the article he read, they were coated onto aerospace and medical devices. And nothing you could do after you coated that device with this nanocrystalline metal could break that device. So he's decided to coat a ping pong ball with this nanocrystalline metal, and he couldn't break a ping pong ball. Now, we all know what the weight and the dimensions of a ping pong ball, and they're pretty easy to crack or to break. So after trying this experiment with the ping pong ball, Daniel said, you know, why don't I do it with hockey sticks? Because, like, as he said, you know, watch a hockey game, you see about 12 broken sticks per period, practically. So in conjunction with 476 interested recreational players and NHL alumni, and through a successful Kickstarter campaign, which, of course, is that online crowdsourcing fundraising avenue, he raised $100,000 to develop this hockey stick that is covered in the nanocrystalline metals. The blade and the bottom third of the shaft was coated in the material, strengthening what is known as the hack zone, where, you know, you get hit on your stick there and eventually microfractures develop,
right,
and eventually the stick breaks. It's amazing. You know, there's a video on it, and we can send it out on our Twitter feed, @IllegalCurve. You know, he takes the stick and he puts it through tests of thousands of shots and breaking it over, trying to break it over a crossbar and over a goalpost, and the stick appears to be completely indestructible.
Right, and none of us have played with it, but
Didn't you spray yourself with that, Ezzy, and just go to work one day?
No, but the reality...
Yeah, he thought it was for a hangover, and it didn't work.
The reality of this stick, though, is you mentioned these microfractures, and to me, this is fascinating. From a guy who struggled with grade 10 chemistry and doesn't really understand what nanomaterial even means or how to spell it, I think it's really interesting that this stuff reduces the microfractures, and what that essentially means is that When you have a slash or a slap shot, the amount of slap shots required to lead to a full break are reduced, right? So the issue that came up to me right off the bat is this safe because of the fact that there is this nanomaterial coated on the bottom of the shaft? And it appears it is. So if this is safe and it leads to less sticks being broken, I think you're going to see, by the way, if the big companies, and we all know who the big companies are, if they start getting involved in this, then you're going to see maybe, you know, Richie, it start to pick up some steam. But at this point, it looks like this is still in the kind of prototype stage. And I'm not saying that, you know, this isn't the future, but he's still putting it here at $270.
Well,
so it's not like the stick is cheaper by any means, but
it doesn't break.
It might be Richie buying one stick versus six a year, right?
Sure. You have rec league players who buy one piece composite sticks for a couple $100 a pop and they break after an hour.
Right.
If you can pay $270 for a stick that's virtually indestructible, sign me up.
The way of the future. I mean, what if you slash as hard as you can, it still doesn't break?
Well, then you brought talk about that. Expand on that thought.
The concern is, you know, if you slash some guy really hard or slash a guy's stick really hard, the stick gives a bit and then breaks, and then, you know, you can't. My concern is if it gets you, some guy's really going at it and starts slashing somebody, you know, on the leg or on the arm or in the head, whatever it may be, and that stick's not breaking.
Right, and Richie, that's to me is the flaw of this article. He doesn't go into, is it actually safe? You know, is it the same as wood? Is it different than wood? So that's something that's yet to be determined. But as far as it's neat to know that they're trying to come up with new technologies to make sticks more durable, because I think it's ridiculous. I think that's not to say that the companies haven't tried to make the sticks more durable, because they have. But I think you're still seeing sticks breaking at a very high rate. So it's going to be interesting to see this develop, because this article came out less than a month ago. And, you know, the fact that he raised $100,000 means that enough people believe in it, right?
Yeah, obviously. I mean, we try and raise $100,000 to, you know, get people to buy you, and so far nobody's buying.
No.
Nobody's taking that bait.
I will say, in terms of, you know, outpricing these kids these days with these Tims, parents paying for the kids, will pay any price for these sticks, any price for an edge. And so you better believe, and if they can save money in the future by buying one, not many, I don't think price will be an issue here, really.
Well,
I mean, it will price out some people, unfortunately, but you see the kids right now, they'll buy $100, $150 sticks like it's nothing.
Sure. I mean, it's
not their money.
Well, sure, but I mean, that's what parents, I mean, because, I mean, and that's a combination of, you know, the one kid on the team has the
great stick, and then every
parent feels the need that their kid has to have that stick.
You guys know that I finally played my first rec hockey league game last week, right?
By the way,
I played on Richie's birthday, but I just wanted to tell you something. I was worried about my stick breaking. You know, I have a mortgage to pay, so what I did was I put a bacon wave on the bottom of the stick. And then actually, as I was playing, I was able to feed myself bacon from the stick while also increasing the durability of the stick.
No comment.
I was going to ask how your game went, but really, I mean,
I got a couple assists. It was fun. I mean, I puked several times after the game, but I mean, it was good to get back out there.
I heard reports were that you were green sitting there after the game and you're hardly moving.
Those reports are correct.
You didn't also say that the reason you went to this game, the first game you've attended all year, is because the wind-up happened before with
pizza
and beer.
Yeah, yes. There was a banquet, actually, at Boston Pizza. Yeah, it was great. Good pierogi pizza, some wings.
So before you played hockey for the first time in about a year, you drank heavily and ate pizza.
It's absurd.
Oh, no, I just drank water. None of that other stuff.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Jamal Mayers is going to join us. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Here on NHL Midweek on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're expecting Jamal Mayers to give us a call any minute now. We'll talk about his career.
Yes, I know anybody played the song that on a day that wasn't Saturday.
It's a fair point.
Who cares?
And we have a Saturday show, too.
Which is odd, because I don't think he's played it on Saturday.
It's a good song. I'll play it whatever day I want to play it.
Ooh.
Wow.
We're not doing this again, are we? Anyways, update from MTS Center. The fastest skater competition is in the books.
Donald Brashear.
Wasn't quite Donald Brashear.
He used to always win for Vancouver.
Triba.
Nope.
Who won it?
Mark Scheifele. 13.673 seconds. He beats Blake Wheeler, who had 13.786 seconds. Evander Kane, the pre-event favorite, apparently stumbled in the course of the skate. So, Mark Scheifele with the victory there. Everything's just coming up for the rookie lately. Right?
No? Way to give 110%.
Anyways, Jamal Mayer is going to be giving us a call momentarily here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Guys, any problem with Milan Lucic's comments about the city of Vancouver earlier this week?
Wow. Those were...
Well, you tell people what he said first.
Sure.
Yeah,
okay.
Those were pretty harsh.
Yeah, he was... You know, apparently he was out in Vancouver, downtown Vancouver, after the game on Saturday where the Bruins lost to the Vancouver Canucks. Uh-huh. And claims, I mean, that he was minding his own business and just, you know, enjoying a night out, and he was accosted at a downtown bar.
There's a little bit of a video of it.
There is a video of it. You just sort of see the tail end of it, and, you know, without obviously, you know, he's obviously very upset in the video, and you can hear off camera that there's somebody hollering that that Lucic is completely fine. He's in the clear on this one. He didn't do anything to, you know, to instigate this incident. Lucic said he was minding his own business when he was attacked inside a Vancouver nightclub. Here are his quotes. "I did everything I could to restrain myself and not retaliate," Lucic told the Vancouver Province. He says, "I have no reason left to defend my city and the people in my city. I'm disgusted and outraged that it had to come to something like that. So as far as that goes, other than being at Rogers Arena, no one will ever see me in downtown Vancouver ever again. I've been downtown Vancouver 50, 60 times, and I've never even come close to an altercation. But this one obviously ended in one." There is a history here in that, you know, when the Bruins and the Canucks played each other in the Stanley Cup Final, afterwards, his hometown church, I mean, a religious institution, was vandalized with a Go Canucks tags spray painted on it. And in the 2011 Stanley Cup Final, there were reports of people harassing his grandparents in Rogers Arena.
Idiots. I mean, what are people doing? First off, who spray paints a church and who goes after elderly? Yeah. Like, I got to defend Lucic here because I like Lucic as a hockey player. He's very tough. He's a sniper. He's a great player for the Bruins. He's got a cup. He very well could get another one because the Bruins look pretty darn good this year too. But he goes to a bar and, you know, he gets punched and people are swearing at him. I mean, this is his hometown. He's from Vancouver. Like, what are these people doing? Like, just idiots. And, you know, sure, his words must be harsh, but how would you feel if you know, your parents are getting bothered and people are swearing at you when you're out and you're just trying to enjoy, you know, a night back in your hometown? Like, sure, you definitely don't want to see this, but, I mean, these fans, like, it's inexcusable, in my opinion.
The Canucks fans are classic bandwagoners. This team, they always get on the team when the team's going well. Remember, where were they before that team had a nice run, you know, with the Bertuzzi-Naslin years into the Sedin years there?
Didn't sell out the playoff home playoff games last year.
Yeah, the Canucks fans are a joke. I mean, come on. I've always thought they were bad. They have a good core. They have a nice core there, but some of those fans are idiots. And these guys are idiots who make all Vancouver fans look terrible. I mean,
by the way, if you're you know, Lucic, I always call him Lucic. If you're starting a fight with him, have you seen him? Like, I mean, that guy is a big guy, and again, he's probably thinking, I don't want to get involved here. But if you're going to pick a fight with someone, he's not the guy to pick a fight with. That guy is built like a tank, and you know, it's absolutely ludicrous that I understand that, you know, hockey's all about rivalries and. This guy's from Vancouver. Treat him better when you see him. I mean, the guy hasn't done anything wrong, aside, Richie, from playing hard on the ice. So, I mean, the fans that are doing this garbage, I have no time for them. They're idiots.
Yeah, and they give all fans bad names. Like these NFL fans who are getting fights with other NFL fans. I mean, you know, yep. At the end of the day, it's sports, and you have to have fun with it. And the Canucks blew it in Game 7 of the final, and they had their chance in Game 6, too. And why are you blaming Milan Lucic? I mean, why don't you blame your team for not showing up?
Sure. I mean, it was just remarkable that this video, and we will tweet it out in the comments. I mean, I wrote it down in the show plan here. You know, what? And I'll ask, you mentioned it, Richie, that the Vancouver fans are bandwagon fans and everything else. You know,
most fans are bandwagon fans, but
right.
Vancouver is bandwagon fans.
I mean, you can't paint
too.
All Vancouver Canucks fans with one brush.
You're right.
I mean, they have fans that are educated hockey fans that treat the game with respect, but spray painting a church. I mean, what are you doing?
And the rioting. I mean, come on, guys.
It's inexcusable. I mean, those people have. There's no reason for that type of behavior.
Does Vancouver have the worst hockey fans in Canada of an NHL team in Canada?
You really want to get us in trouble here with the Canucks fans, don't you?
Well, you know what? It's a fair question. I haven't heard about a player's church getting spray painted in Winnipeg.
I'll save myself here and just say that the Jets have the best fans.
Oh. That's the answer. You know what, Drew, based on the activities of the Canucks fans, and you have to say, obviously, based on the riots and this altercation, not so much as all this is, I don't really know the details here, but you mentioned the church issue and harassing his grandparents and not selling out the playoff games. Yeah, right now, I think so. I mean, I just don't understand why these fans take to harassing a homegrown guy. I mean, a guy who plays in the Vancouver Giants, a guy you should be proud of. You know, he's not at the level of Jonathan Toews, granted, but Jonathan Toews comes back to here and young guy, and he's like royalty. Milan Lucic, I realize, won the cup and in Vancouver for Boston, but you develop a player, he plays in your city for junior. You know, you could have selected him. He didn't go in the first round. He went in the second round. You could have traded it to select him. And I think the Canucks had a first-round pick that year as well. And if you read it, there's actually an interesting story. As an aside, there's an interesting story about the Bruins scout who worked for the Canucks, I believe it was, and the Canucks drafted Cam Neely, and they ended up trading him, obviously, to Boston. And many people think, you know, one of the reasons the Bruins selected Lucic was because of the similarities to Cam Neely, although not as offensively gifted. And that scout actually ended up working for Boston and being a part of the selection of Lucic. So don't you want to be proud of the player? And I realize it's one, you know, it's a few people who are making it look, you know, look bad for everybody. But I just don't understand the lack of respect. And
right.
And they hate the Bruins. I fully understand that. I'd hate my own team more for the fact that I believe they scored 8 goals in 7 games in that finals.
Yeah, but Richie, you know, this is for Canucks fans. And any fan in hockey or any sport, I mean, it's fine to cheer your team and boo the other team. But off the ice, you know, this whole business of, you know, swearing at guys and especially guys that are from your hometown, I mean, get a life. And it's extremely, to me, it's just discouraging. And it just brings kind of bad press to Vancouver. I think Vancouver's a great city, by the way. I've been to Vancouver many times.
You're sucking up to the whole city of Vancouver?
No. I'm just saying that, you know, unfortunately, a lot of fans can ruin it for more fans. But it's to see a guy that feels uncomfortable in his own hometown is just extremely disappointing.
Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Come on.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Rich, decent suggestion, decent pick.
That's interesting selection, American Land off Wrecking Ball. I'll give you credit there.
Thank you. I enjoy it. It's quite the sort of it's got a very good beat to it.
It's his finishing song on this most recent tour.
Okay, well, there you go. Anyways, welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca, we bring in our colleague live from the press box at MTS Center, where the Winnipeg Jets skills competition is going on. Dave Manuk from IllegalCurve.com. Dave, good evening. How are you?
I'm well, Drew. How are you guys doing?
We're doing fine and dandy. Thank you very much. So you're what? One event? Are you through one event so far? Give us a scene setter at MTS Center.
We've finished the speed skating portion of the contest, and they're now doing accuracy.
Okay, so who won the speed skating portion?
Fastest skater was Mark Scheifele, actually. Kind of a surprise. He pulled up 13.67. You know what? It's amazing how guys often say it doesn't look as fast from up here as it does on the ice. And you know what? That's the way it looks. You guys look like they weren't going fast at all. And, you know, Allerby pulled off a fairly fast time. He looked like he was moving at a snail pace. And Scheifele pulled it. You know, the interesting thing is Kane did a little bit of a wipeout. Not bad, but just kind of hit an edge at the behind the net. Otherwise, he may have been tight. And then Blake Wheeler was the only guy who came close.
Dave, the accuracy is coming up. What's the chatter right now? You're at the MTS Center. Who's the favorite? Who do you think's going to win the accuracy competition?
You know what? Right now, Shifley's time looks like it could be the one to beat. Elle Jokinen just went up. I didn't exactly catch how he did, but he did fairly well. It looks like the crowd is, this is an unbelievable crowd. I mean, the whole place is full. There's, you know, maybe there's some empty seats up in the upper deck, but the lower bowl is completely full. they've actually pulled the glass out of the board. So the fans are getting up close and personal. The players are signing autographs for them, which is pretty neat. And it's a really good atmosphere. And as you guys can probably hear right now, pretty loud.
Here's an update via Twitter. Russ Hobson is reporting that Brian Little hit all four targets with just five shots, and he's won the accuracy competition.
Well, there you go. He had a chance to beat him and didn't get it done.
Dave,
as far as the players go, you mentioned that some of the players are signing autographs there. Do the players look like they're having fun? Because that was a tough loss last night in Buffalo.
You know what? I wasn't sure how they would handle playing in a skills kind of a fun competition following a really tough loss last night on the road. But you know what? They seem to be in good spirits. They're having a lot of fun. Blake Wheeler's clowning around on the ice with the guys, interviewing his fellow players with the Jets, Mike. And everybody seems to be in a pretty good mood right now. So it appears they've tried to rule that off and just enjoy the night and give the fans a good show.
Dave, Remus wants to know what's the hot dog situation in the press box?
The hot dog situation is minimal because that word describes how many press are actually here. We're down to a skeleton crew of possibly six press members. In fact, we've broken divisions. There's no sides. Everybody is in one area. So all the groups are lumped into one spot, which coincidentally is in the illegal curve section, so. I didn't have to move.
Yeah, well, I'm sure everybody just wants a piece of illegal curve, undoubtedly. Dave Manouk is live at the MTS Center. He will be updating the illegal curve live blog all night long as the Winnipeg Jets skills competition continues on. Dave, thanks very much.
All right, guys. Have a good rest of your show.
Thanks, Dave. We'll talk to you later.
Dave's going to be on this week.
Yes, Saturday. I'm gone for the next two shows. Obviously, next Wednesday. This is the final midweek show of 2013. Next Wednesday being Christmas Day, we're going to take that off. And then New Year's Day on Wednesday, January the 1st, we're also going to take that off. So Midweek returns Wednesday, January the 8th after tonight. In terms of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, no Saturdays are being missed there. We're going to be on every Saturday. I'm gone for the next two Saturdays, though, as I'm off to Kentucky for the holiday season.
See you later.
Oh, I thought that's not what I heard. I thought you were backpacking in Europe.
Yeah, it's close. I thought it was kind of rude of you guys to I thought it was nice of you to offer to buy me a ticket to Kentucky, but the fact it was only a one-way ticket, I thought was a little insulting. I thought that was a little bit mean of you guys, to be honest. Anyways, let's do six things we learned this week.
Six things we learned this week.
Commence countdown. Six.
Ezzy Ginsberg, I'll start with you for six things. On a team stacked with young draft picks, 19-year-old rookie forward Zemgus Girgensons.
Good pronunciation, Drew.
Thank you. Has been a standout for the Buffalo Sabres and has been one of the most reliable players for head coach Ted Nolan, playing on a line with Matt Molson and Tyler Ennis.
He really has. And, guys, this team, you know, has a lot of young prospects, and Mikhail Grigorenko is a guy that I thought would take advantage of ice time, and he really hasn't done it. And then this year's draft, Nikita Zadorov, another guy who has struggled to stay in the lineup, and Girgensons is a great player, and if you've watched him play, and they obviously played the Jets yesterday, Girgensons is a fantastic player. Physical. He's got going into last night's game, he had 4 points in his last five games. You might look at his stats and say he's only got 11 points on the season, but he's playing there with Matt Molson and Tyler Ennis. He's got the confidence of Ted Nolan, and he's one of those guys that works his buns off, and he really looks like he's a key cog going into the future for that team. So Girgensons has been a very pleasant surprise to me, and I enjoy watching him play.
Five.
Richard Paul, Cam Fowler is coming into his own in Anaheim.
Yeah, Cam Fowler, Drew, is drafted out of Windsor, Spitfires by Anaheim, a guy who fell in his draft year, and people were wondering, you know, he can move the puck, he can skate, but can he do the rest? Can he play the rest? And he's formed a really nice combo in Anaheim with Ben Lovejoy. He's logging big minutes. He is engaging physically. He can skate. He's big and can skate, and he can move the puck. People might not be talking much about Cam Fowler, but you give it some time, you're going to be hearing his name a lot more, because when you have the skill set he has and you're engaging physically and you're playing against other teams' best players, you're quietly going to make it. You're going to make a name for yourself amongst the NHL. Whether you make a name for yourself amongst the media because of where you play is another story. But there's no delay in this guy's development. He is taking the next step, as far as I'm concerned.
Four.
Ezzy Ginsberg, if the Montreal Canadiens want to be a serious Stanley Cup playoff contender in the near future, Max Pacioretty has to take his game to the next level and put the team on his back.
Pacioretty had two goals last night, albeit one of them was an empty netter, but last year's playoffs, guys, Pacioretty was injured, missed the last game. He had no goals. And for me, this team right now is being led by Alex Galchenyuk and Lars Eller and Brendan Gallagher, even though he's quieted down a little bit. But Max Pacioretty got the big contract. He's under contract, Richie, for 5 more years. And to me, Pacioretty is a guy that has tons of offensive ability. And he hasn't been inconsistent. He was almost a point-a-game player last year. Mm-hmm. But to me, for the Canadians, if they want to be a team that gets out of the first round, because we know they didn't last year, and this team, you know, it was probably a couple of years away, I think, from being a Stanley Cup contender. But to me, he's got to keep up that pace and develop a two-way game, which he has to a certain degree, but he's still somewhat more of a just a goal scorer at this point. He's a smaller guy, but he's got 14 goals now, only 4 assists. So he's starting to come around, but he's been better lately. And to me, you look at, you know, Rene Bork is coming back for the Habs, and Danny Briere has been a huge disappointment for the Habs, but he's older, and really at this point, they're not expecting him to carry the load. But Pacioretty, he's got to do what, you know, Ryan Kessler did, what Dustin Brown does. He's got to take the team and put it on his back and really become, you know, more of a guy that dominates. And he does it at times. But I think to me, that's the key, which will ultimately determine if this Habs team just, you know, finishes third or fourth in the East, makes the playoffs, or if they actually go to the second, third round.
He's not small. He just doesn't use his size as much as I think he could. He does at times, but I think he could engage more physically.
Richard Pollock, Alexander Barkov is quietly tearing up the NHL as of late.
Well, 4 points in his last 4 games. I mean, I think for an 18-year-old, that's basically tearing it up, because it's tough to play hockey in any, you know, at any age, but especially at 18 years old in the National Hockey League. Barkov, Drew, has a great patience with the puck, and a patience you probably really can't teach the skill he has, and he sees the ice so well, but to have that kind of patience that he has, and you'll see him on Friday night here in Winnipeg, to have that patience at that age and to be able to use your teammates that well and put them in positions to succeed, you can't. You know, that's the reason why he was drafted 3rd overall last year. And you know, people had questions about him being drafted over Seth Jones. Give it time. Give it time. And Dale Tallon in Florida to put a nice core together. Barkov is going to be a guy you're going to see on Saturday and Friday night. You're going to say, oh, you know, there's something there. And then you probably see him 3-4 years down the road and say, oh, you know, yeah, he turned into a heck of a player. 2.
Ezzy Ginsberg, Florida Panthers defenseman Dylan Olsen is quietly emerging as a steady defenseman and is making general manager Dale Tallon look like a smart man for trading for him.
Right.
And Florida Panthers appreciation segment.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And the Panthers will be here, as Richie mentioned, Friday night. But Dylan Olsen, Dale Tallon obviously didn't trade for him in the sense that, Richie, the Chicago Blackhawks obviously wanted Christopher Stieg back.
Yeah.
But, you know, people looked at the trade and they said, Dylan Olsen, okay, you know, what is he going to bring to the table? Well, right now he's playing a regular role in the top six. And this is a guy who was also a first-round draft pick. He's got 4 points in his last 5 games.
By Dale Tallon, by the way.
Right? 8 points in his last 11 games. And, you know, the guy is a very good defenseman and he's got some offensive punch. And, you know, a lot of people, again, might have looked at that trade and said, well, they're just unloading Versteeg. But Dylan Olsen, if you watch them play, he's a pretty solid defenseman. He's taken a little bit longer than maybe other defensemen, being a 22-year-old. Mm-hmm. But I really like his game, and I think that trade is not as one-sided as people think it was. 1.
And the final thing that we learned in 2013, Richard Pollock, Alain Vigneault, head
coach. Well, this is all of a sudden a whole year.
Oh, wow.
It's not just this week.
Wow.
Hey, now.
Alain Vigneault, head coach of the New York Rangers, has mismanaged Michael Delzato to a point where the Rangers have devalued an asset.
Michael Delzato's never been the most defensively efficient player in the National Hockey League, but he can skate, and he can shoot, and he can handle the puck. And Vino doesn't like him, and he keeps throwing him into the press box, and everybody knows he's available. Ottawa calls on him. I bet you, you know, 20 teams in the NHL have called on him. But when he's not providing value to your roster, or at least you're not allowing him to, and everybody knows he's available, you limit what you can get for him in return, right, I think. And their core group, you know, Girardi's a pending UFA, and they have Stahl. You know, obviously had the eye injury and such, and, you know, back to the level, you could certainly argue that. And then Ryan McDonagh, who's their best all-around defenseman. You want to round out that core, with you know, with like probably your best naturally talented offensive defenseman. If he's on his way out, you know, they're asking apparently for a defenseman in return. So it's been too public for me, and I realize you can utilize the press box as a place to discipline a player, especially, you know, a player in Delzal's situation who isn't a pending UFA or anything like that. You know, he's still in RFA status. But I think it's gone a little bit extreme, and now with the league knowing how the league knowing that the relationship between Vigneault and Delzado, you have to think that everybody's trying to get him for, you know, three dimes on the dollar here, or, you know, the quarter, you know, half a 50 cents on the dollar, as they say, Drew. And one thing about Delzado is he's still a young defenseman. And I'm going to touch on this for a second because he's not the best defensive defenseman. But, for example, the Jets could use a nice left side guy to fill in their top four. I'm sure they probably made a call on him. But it's hard to teach, and the Rangers are likely going to say their nose this, but you can't teach the skating and puck moving ability of Michael Delzado. So I bet you many teams are making that call, and if it's a defenseman for defenseman trade, I'd be very interested to see who it goes the other way, because there aren't many guys who can do what he can do that are anywhere close to the market.
Grant Clitson for Michael Delzado.
Done deal.
That's it for this Wednesday evening and NHL midweek here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to our guest tonight, Dave Harmon, Vice President of HBO Sports, coordinating producer of 24/7, The Road to the NHL Winter Classic. In case you missed any of that, it will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and on illegalcurve.com. Big thank you to our sponsor, Chill Bar and Grill, for their support on tonight's episode of NHL Midweek. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news. The live blog from the Jets Skills Competition is ongoing, is IllegalCurve.com. Big thank you to the intern, or Jesse the intern. Big thank you to producer Michael Remus, and for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. For me, because I'll be gone until then, a happy holidays to everybody, a happy new year. Richard and Ezra will be here on Saturday, of course. Dave and Remus and Jesse will be here as well. But until 2013, on my behalf, thanks very much for listening and your support of Illegal Curve Hockey.
You've been listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch The Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.